Chapter 25. The first sensible reflect I made was, that my husband was not by to see my disorder, and that I was very glad of it. The gentlemen had not been long in the house, but they came to the window of their room, as is usual, but my window was shut, you may be sure. However, I could not keep from peeping at them, and there I saw him again, heard him call out to one of the servants of the house for something he wanted, and received all the terrifying confirmations of its being the same person that were possible to be had. My next concern was to know, if possible, what was his business there, but that was impossible. Sometimes my imagination formed an idea of one frightful thing, sometimes of another. Sometime I thought he had discovered me, and was come to upbraid me with ingratitude and breach of honor, and every moment I fancied he was coming up the stairs to insult me, and innumerable fancies came into my head, of what was never in his head, nor ever could be, unless the devil had revealed it to him. I remained in this fright nearly 2 hours, and scarce ever kept my eye from the window or door of the inn where they were. At last, hearing a great clatter in the passage of their inn, I ran to the window, and, to my great satisfaction, saw them all three go out again, and travel on westward. Had they gone towards London, I should have been still in a fright, lest I should meet him on the road again, and that he should know me. But he went the contrary way, and so I was eased of that disorder. We resolved to be going the next day, but about 6 o'clock at night we were alarmed with a great uproar in the street, and people writing, as if they had been out of their wits. And what was it, but a hue and cry after three highwaymen, that had robbed two coaches and some other travellers near Dunstable Hill, and notice had, it seems, been given that they had been seen at Brick Hill at such a house, meaning the house where those gentlemen had been. The house was immediately beset and searched, but there were witnesses enough, that the gentlemen had been gone over 3 hours. The crowd having gathered about, we had the news presently, and I was heartily concerned now another way. I presently told the people of the house, that I durst to say those were not the persons, for that I knew one of the gentlemen, to be a very honest person, and of a good estate in Lancashire. The constable who came with the hue and cry was immediately informed of this, and came over to me to be satisfied from my own mouth, and I assured him, that I saw the three gentlemen as I was at the window, that I saw them afterwards at the windows of the room they dined in, that I saw them afterwards take horse, and I could assure him I knew one of them to be such a man, that he was a gentleman of a very good estate, and an undoubted character in Lancashire, from whence I was just now upon my journey. The assurance with which I delivered this gave the mob gentry a check, and gave the constable such satisfaction, that he immediately sounded a retreat, told his people these were not the men, but that he had an account they were very honest gentlemen, and so they went all back again. What the truth of the matter was I knew not, but certain it was that the coaches were robbed at Dunstable Hill, and number 560 in money taken. Besides, some of the lace merchants that always travel that way had been visited too. As to the three gentlemen, that remains to be explained hereafter. Well, this alarm stopped us another day, though my spouse was for travelling, and told me, that it was always safest travelling after a robbery, for that the thieves were sure to be gone far enough off when they had alarmed the country. But I was afraid and uneasy, and indeed principally lest my old acquaintance should be upon the road still, and should chance to see me. I never lived 4 pleasanter days together in my life. I was a mere bride all this while, and my new spouse strove to make me entirely easy in everything. Oh, could this state of life have continued, how had all my past troubles been forgot, and my future sorrows avoided? But I had a past life of a most wretched kind to account for, some if it in this world as well as in another. We came away the 5th day, and my landlord, because he saw me uneasy, mounted himself, his son, and 3 honest country fellows with good firearms, and, without telling us of it, followed the coach, and would see us safe into Dunstable. We could do no less than treat them very handsomely at Dunstable, which cost my spouse about 10 or 12 shillings, and something he gave the men for their time too, but my landlord would take nothing for himself. This was the most happy contrivance for me that could have fallen out, for had I come to London unmarried, I must either have come to him for the first night's entertainment, or have discovered to him that I had not one acquaintance in the whole city of London that could receive a poor bride for the first night's lodging with her spouse. But now, being an old married woman, I made no scruple of going directly home with him, and there I took possession at once of a house well furnished, and a husband in very good circumstances, so that I had a prospect of a very happy life, if I knew how to manage it, and I had leisure to consider of the real value of the life I was likely to live. How different it was to be from the loose ungoverned part I had acted before, and how much happier a life of virtue and sobriety is than that which we call a life of pleasure. Oh, had this particular scene of life lasted, or had I learned from that time I enjoyed it, to have tasted the true sweetness of it, and had I not fallen into that poverty which is the sure bane of virtue, how happy had I been, not only here, but perhaps forever. For while I lived thus, I was really a penitent for all my life past. I looked back on it with abhorrence, and might truly be said to hate myself for it. I often reflected how my lover at the bath, struck at the hand of God, repented and abandoned me, and refused to see me any more, though he loved me to an extreme. But I, prompted by that worst of devils, poverty, returned to the vile practice, and made the advantage of what they call a handsome face to be a relief to my necessities, and beauty be a pimp to vice. Now I seemed landed in a safe harbor, after the stormy voyage of life past was at an end, and I began to be thankful for my deliverance. I sat many an hour by myself, and wept over the remembrance of past follies, and the dreadful extravagances of a wicked life, and sometimes I flattered myself that I had sincerely repented. But there are temptations which it is not in the power of human nature to resist, and few know what would be their case if driven to the same exigencies. As covetousness is the root of all evil, so poverty is, I believe, the worst of all snares. But I waive that discourse till I come to an experiment. I lived with this husband with the utmost tranquility. He was a quiet, sensible, sober man, virtuous, modest, sincere, and in his business diligent and just. His business was in a narrow compass, and his income sufficient to a plentiful way of living in the ordinary way. I do not say to keep an equipage, and make a figure, as the world calls it, nor did I expect it, or desire it, for as I abhorred the levity and extravagance of my former life, so I chose now to live retired, frugal, and within ourselves. I kept no company, made no visits, minded my family, and obliged my husband, and this kind of life became a pleasure to me. We lived in an uninterrupted course of ease and content for 5 years, when a sudden blow from an almost invisible hand blasted all my happiness, and turned me out into the world in a condition the reverse of all that had been before it. My husband having trusted one of his fellow clerks with a sum of money, too much for our fortunes, to bear the loss of, the clerk failed, and the loss fell very heavy on my husband, yet it was not so great neither but that, if he had had spirit and courage, to have looked his misfortunes in the face, his credit was so good that, as I told him, he would easily recover it, for to sink under trouble is to double the weight, and he that will die in it, shall die in it. It was in vain to speak comfortably to him, the wound had sunk too deep. It was a stab that touched the vitals. He grew melancholy and disconsolate, and from thence lethargic, and died. I foresaw the blow, and was extremely oppressed in my mind, for I saw, evidently, that if he died I was undone. I had had 2 children by him and no more, for, to tell the truth, it began to be time for me to leave bearing children. For I was now 8 and 40, and I suppose, if he had lived I should have had no more. I was now left in a dismal and disconsolate case indeed, and in several things worse than ever. First, it was past the flourishing time with me, when I might expect to be courted for a mistress. That agreeable part had declined some time, and the ruins only appeared of what had been. And that which was worse than all this, that I was the most dejected, disconsolate creature alive. I had encouraged my husband, and endeavored to support his spirits under his trouble, could not support my own. I wanted that spirit in trouble which I told him was so necessary to him for bearing the burthen. But my case was indeed deplorable, for I was left perfectly friendless and helpless, and the loss my husband had sustained had reduced his circumstances so low, that though indeed I was not in debt, yet I could easily foresee that what was left would not support me long, that while it wasted daily for subsistence, I had not way to increase it 1 shilling, so that it would be soon all spent, and then I saw nothing before me but the utmost distress. And this represented itself so lively to my thoughts, that it seemed as if it was come, before it was really very near. Also my very apprehensions doubled the misery, for I fancied every sixpence that I paid for a loaf of bread was the last that I had in the world, and that tomorrow I was to fast, and be starved to death. In this distress I had no assistant, no friend to comfort or advise me. I sat and cried, and tormented myself night and day, wringing my hands, and sometimes raving like a distracted woman. And indeed I have often wondered it had not affected my reason, for I had the vapors to such a degree, that my understanding was sometimes quite lost in fancies and imaginations. I lived 2 years in this dismal condition, wasting that little I had, weeping continually over my dismal circumstances, and, as it were, only bleeding to death, without the least hope or prospect of help from God or man. And now I had cried too long, and so often, that tears were, as I might say, exhausted, and I began to be desperate, for I grew poor apace. For a little relief I had put off my house and took lodgings. And as I was reducing my living, so I sold off most of my goods, which put a little money in my pocket, and I lived near a year upon that, spending very sparingly, and eking things out to the utmost. But still when I looked before me, my very heart would sink within me at the inevitable approach of misery and want. Oh, let none read this part without seriously reflecting on the circumstances of a desolate state, and how they would grapple with mere want of friends and want of bread. It will certainly make them think, not of sparing what they have only, but of looking up to heaven for support, and of the wise man's prayer, "Give me not poverty, lest I steal." Apostrophe, let them remember that a time of distress is a time of dreadful temptation, and all the strength to resist is taken away. Poverty presses, the soul is made desperate by distress, and what can be done? It was one evening, when being brought, as I may say, to the last gasp, I think I may truly say I was distracted and raving, when prompted by I know not what spirit, and, as it were, doing I did not know what, or why, I dressed me, for I had still pretty good clothes, and went out. I am very sure I had no manner of design in my head when I went out. I neither knew nor considered where to go, or on what business. But as the devil carried me out, and laid his bait for me, so he brought me, to be sure, to the place, for I knew not whither I was going, or what I did. Wandering thus about, I knew not whither, I passed by an apothecary's shop in Ludendale Street, when I saw lie on the stool just before the counter a little bundle wrapped in a white cloth. Beyond it stood a maid servant with her back to it, looking towards the top of the shop, where the apothecary's apprentice, as I suppose, was standing upon the counter, with his back also to the door, and a candle in his hand, looking, and reaching up to the upper shelf for something he wanted, so that both were engaged mighty earnestly, and nobody else in the shop. This was the bait. And the devil, who I said laid the snare, as readily prompted me, as if he had spoke, for I remember, and shall never forget it, 'twas like a voice spoken to me over my shoulder, "Take the bundle, be quick, do it this moment." Apostrophe it was no sooner said, but I stepped into the shop, and with my back to the wench, as if I had stood up for a cart that was going by, I put my hand behind me, and took the bundle, and went off with it, the maid or the fellow not perceiving me, or anyone else. It is impossible to express the horror of my soul all the while I did it. When I went away I had no heart to run, or scarce to mend my pace. I crossed the street indeed, and went down the first turning I came to, and I think it was a street that went through into Fenchurch Street. From thence I crossed and turned through so many ways and turnings that I could never tell which way it was, not where I went, for I felt not the ground I stepped on, and the farther I was out of danger, the faster I went, till, tired and out of breath, I was forced to sit down on a little bench at a door, and then I began to recover, and found I was got into Thames Street, near Billingsgate. I rested me a little and went on. My blood was all in a fire, my heart beat, as if I was in a sudden fright. In short, I was under such a surprise, that I still knew not whither I was going, or what to do. After I had tired myself thus with walking a long way about, and so eagerly, I began to consider, and make home to my lodging, where I came about 9 o'clock at night. When the bundle was made up for, or on what occasion laid where I found it, I knew not, but when I came to open it, I found there was a suit of child bed linen in it, very good and almost new, the lace very fine. There was a silver porringer of a pint, a small silver mug and 6 spoons, with some other linen, a good smock, and 3 silk handkerchiefs, and in the mug, wrapped up in a paper, 18s. 60 in money. All the while I was opening these things I was under such dreadful impressions of fear, and I such terror of mind, though I was perfectly safe, that I cannot express the manner of it. I sat me down, and cried most vehemently. Lord, apostrophe said I, what am I now? A thief. Why, I shall be taken next time, and be carried to Newgate, and be tried for my life. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and with that I cried again a long time, and I am sure, as poor as I was, if I had durst for fear, I would certainly have carried the things back again, but that went off after a while. Well, I went to bed for that night, but slept little. The horror of the fact was upon my mind, and I knew not what I said, or did all night, and all the next day. Then I was impatient to hear some news of the loss, and would fain know how it was, whether they were a poor body's goods, or a rich. Perhaps, apostrophe said I, it may be some poor widow like me, that had packed up these goods, to go and sell them for a little bread for herself and a poor child, and are now starving and breaking their hearts for. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.